in terms of the research, moving away from everything has to benefit academically, it doesn't. If you're evolving that human and making them feel good through an activity, then that can have flow-on effects to other things that they are doing.
As vozes do professor.
A sua pelo alimu.
Lousi Yawai.
Teachers' voices.
Welcome to a new episode of Teachers' Voices, a podcast made of the stories of teachers around the world talking in their own words. I'm your host, Nina Alonso, and today we are talking about the importance of physical well-being when young people learn and develop with a focus on physical activity. Why does movement help children thrive? To learn about the research on learning and physical activity, I first talked to Fotini Vassilopoulos in Australia. Fotini researches the impact of physical activity on cognition and social and emotional learning in primary school children. I also traveled to India and California to talk to educators who are developing innovative learning models in school education and after-school programs. So Mil Maj Mudar is the founder of Sports Village, India's largest youth sports platform, which incorporates play in physical education across hundreds of schools in India. Tanya Shikli is founder of the App Academy, host of the Rebel Educator podcast too. Let's start our journey on the east coast of Australia in Sydney, where Fotini welcomes us to talk about her research on the impact of physical activity on well-being. Hello, Fotini.
How are you?
Good morning from Europe. Where are you now?
It's good evening for me. It's good evening for me. I'm at home in Sydney. I'm originally from Sydney. I moved back a few months ago after 20 years of being away.
Fotini, why is physical activity good for kids?
Physical activity is important for physical health, for mental health, and it also can drive behaviors for learning. That's a very wide-ranging set of outcomes. What I would say is there are many ways you can practice how to move, if you like to put it like that. It depends on what the child likes, or what the group of children like, and also what you want to focus on in terms of outcomes.
How well developed is the research in this area?
The research is quite extensive, but what I would say with children, the last 20 years, there's been a flurry of research of different types of interventions and how they may affect and influence certain outcomes in children. It's been heavily focused on the cognition. And what I found in my research, I conducted a meta-analysis, so grouping a lot of studies together to see how that influences different types of cognitive outcomes. And the only effects that we found were on working memory, but we found that it influenced things like on-task behavior. So it's maybe the behavioral aspects that you're picking up on when you're practicing physical activity that could lead to behavioral changes and acquiring certain skills for children that may help with learning.
What types of physical activity could teachers offer to help children move?
As a teacher, what I would think of first is the child or the children. Giving them a buffet of experiences would be one. Now, when we talk about physical activity, a lot of the time people think sports, competition, these types of things. Although that's a very valid thing to be participating in, that's not the only thing that you can use to have children move. So with really young children, play, allowing them to play outside freely, offering things like dance and different types of dances to pique other people's interests. So it's offering that buffet. And also, depending on the types of physical activity that you offer, it can elicit different processes.
It's interesting that you suggest play and different kinds of movement because the educators I'm talking today prioritize play and a variety of movement.
I ran a dance project for 10 weeks for primary school age children. It was a creative dance intervention. And we didn't want to look at cognition because there's been so many different interventions looking at physical activity and cognition. Took a step back and said, okay, if you look at all these interventions and you group them together, creative dance, what does it offer? It offers an open environment to foster creativity. So we looked at creativity as an outcome and we did find effects. And we also looked at self-regulatory skills like pro-social behavior, like emotional regulation, and also personal traits like persistence, openness. And we did find effects on these type of traits. So if you want to foster things like creativity, creative dance would be something really good to use. And also when you offer that buffet, you do foster inclusivity, because there are gender differences in participation of different types of physical activity and what effects that they can have as well, especially in the younger years, because fine motor skills and gross motor skills develop differently in boys and girls.
What does the research say that schools could do better to support children in physical education, PE, classes?
What I would say in terms of the PE environment that helped a lot was how you arrange the space. What I offered in my teaching is a space to calm down. You tape off a corner of the hall, you label it, and you name it to the children. And so at the start, you may ask them to go there. Then after a few weeks, you give them a choice that you can go there whenever you like, as long as no one else is in there. And what you see and what the PE teachers saw on the creative dance intervention is you didn't have all these young children coming up to you, I need water, I need to go to the toilet, all these types of breaks that they wanted that weren't actually for that. It's just maybe they needed a pause and a little space for themselves before they could fully participate again. It's just about organizing the space, so the space to calm down. Also having guidelines, very open guidelines and general ones, being kind, being respectful, but explicitly putting it up, taping a poster up so that the children are aware of those things, like a talking bench. So for older children, if you have something like a talking bench, they know that it's there and they both talk it out instead of the teacher always resolving the problems. And then it's developing those social aspects so that they can resolve it themselves.
And what about in other learning spaces and classrooms outside of the PE lessons?
There's also ways to bring movement into the classroom. So, for example, in research, there is a lot around interventions and projects where they bring movement with mathematic learning. So there could be physical activity breaks, 5-minute break, you know, star jumps, these things that you can do in the classroom to take that pause. So in the classroom where you're not moving that much, maybe you need to move a little bit more, so that you can stay on task afterwards.
What else would you like teachers to know about the science?
If you think humans, they learn through moving. When we're babies, that's how we learn. Whether we're eating, even talking, everything that we do is embodied. And so the analogy that I like to use is the Descartes floating head. You know, I think, therefore I am. No, we have our bodies. We use our bodies to learn. We use our bodies for everything, and the interaction between our brains, body, and environment, these three things allow us to develop. In research before, in cognitive development, they treat it as if the brain was like a computer and processing things, but it's not like that, because we have our bodies and then there's the environment and we're interacting with that through our bodies. And so moving away from that paradigm of, oh, we're doing physical activity and it affects cognition or doesn't affect cognition, and moving towards broader outcomes like social, self-regulatory, and these things influence well-being.
Thanks, Fatini, for those insights. Let's leave Australia and the beach and travel north to India towards the mountains where Somil is waiting for us. Hello, Somil. It's great to talk to you.
Hi, Nina. Thank you for the kind invitation. Happy to be here. I am in India right now in a mountain place in the Himalaya. It's called Landor, and I live in Bangalore in India.
You work on a project called Sports Village, and you have just published a book gathering your insights from more than 20 years of fostering movement and play in school.
Just to clarify, our focus has been on the physical play. Maybe that's what you call movement.
Yes, exactly. Can you tell us about your work in Sports Village? What is your mission and motivation?
We do something very simple. We just get kids to play. And we realize that people understand that kids should play. Everybody says, yeah, kids should play. Or kids should play more, or more kids should play more. But people struggle with how. In the sense of, where do my children play? Some places, some people don't have access to safe spaces for kids to play. When do my children play? Some places people don't have time. Who do my children play with? There are sometimes other children of the same age, skill. interests maybe not available sometimes. What do my children play? Some children want to play for fun. Some children want to play for competition. Some children want to just hang out. And there are different reasons why children play. And who is the child? The central actor in this entire conversation, which all of us as adults are talking about, is a child. What does a child want to play? Right? And different children at different age groups across genders have different requirements or different needs. A small child wants to play very differently from a, let's say, middle school child, from a teenage child. The reason they play change over time. How do you get children play? And we have learned to experiment. School seems to be the most sustainable and scalable way of getting kids to play. And when I say schools, I mean the in-school physical education timetable that provides a safe space, safe time, similar age group kids. So you're able to kind of put them together. There is a supervision around kids in schools and parents trust the space. We've been working with schools through our EduSports program to get kids to play. We today get 300,000 children to play daily across 500 schools in India. And we have a program called EduSports, which essentially tries to make sports or play, that's a loosely used word in our context, as a part of education.
So why is physical play so important in education?
Just as you, all of us learned maths, science and history, we think play is part of education. Play is also sometimes called scientific experiments conducted by children, because that's how they learn about the world. I think the value of physical play as a way for learning, as a way for learning about the world and about learning about your own body, is something that is part of our DNA. That's the way, in fact, all young of the species learn that way. When the young ones are developing, how are we providing safe spaces for children to play, to get hurt so that they know the boundaries of play? Right? If they don't get hurt, they don't know what a boundary is. For any fundamental learning of a child about the environment in which the child is growing up in, play and physical play is the way it interacts.
So, Emil, could you share an example?
We have situations of, let's say, girls being unwilling to play sport in the southern part of India, play football specifically, and how as we got them to learn how to play sport from the level they were in and help them engage and learn positively, from 5 girls playing sport, we got to 565 girls playing football. And therefore, corresponding confidence improvement, we saw that we saw improvement in their own ability to assert their identity. We saw improvement in cohesion amongst the girls. So one important thing is the fun element, the word fun, is a very important reason why kids play. And adults, I think, have a problem dealing with fun. You know, fun gets seen as trivial, fun gets seen as maybe not having value. But the reason kids play fundamentally is fun. Fun is not necessarily that we are all laughing. The way we define it is fun is when 3 things happen. Fun is when you're fully engaged in the activity. 2, you are connected to the people you're doing it with. You're not being left out. And 3, you're stressed slightly beyond your limits. Getting stressed too much is anxiety triggering. Getting stressed too little is boring. So when these 3 things happen, whether you're running a marathon or running a podcast, you need not be laughing and partying, but you're having fun. It's engaging. It is creating a positive cycle of saying, hey, I want to do that again. I had fun. And this notion of fun is something that I think is missing for kids. And because adults have a view that fun is waste of time. Fun is only you do after you finish all your real work. And this balance of fun as a part of child's education and the rigor, how do you balance fun with structure, with rigor, with inclusion, is probably the core thing of what you've been trying to do. And I think it's the responsibility of adults to create environments where kids have fun.
Your approach highlights inclusion, making sure all children can feel well about themselves through physical activities. Can you tell me more about this?
Some people enjoy movement more than others, right? And the question to ask is why? And our hypothesis is that it is because of you had very positive early experiences with movement, and that positive early experiences kept getting positive reinforced, and you kept liking and falling in love with movement. And our view is that in school or at an early age, if you make sure the children have fun through positive experiences of play, they'll keep playing for life. If they have negative or neutral experiences of play, they'll keep walking away from play.
This resonates with my own experience. When I was young, I wanted to play football and the boys didn't let me. I would have loved to share that fun experience, but I was left behind because they thought I was not good.
If at an early age, you naturally know how to kick a ball well and I don't, right? If nobody teaches me how to, I will slowly keep saying football is not for me. Nina can play football. I am not for football. That's the fundamental thing, Nina, that especially in play, sport, the focus is on encouraging kids who are already good physically in movement and not encouraging kids who are not good in movement. And almost labeling them as saying, oh, you're not good in movement, it's okay, you can sit on the side. These kids are good in movement, let's make them into school team champions and so on, right? But if we accept that movement is education, play is education, sport is education, then let's ask what happens in a math class or a science class. If you are good in math and I'm not so good in math, the teacher will spend more time with me because you already know it. And because objective of education is to make the people who are lagging catch up, not to increase the gap of the kids who are already doing well keep doing more and people who are not doing well go down. Similarly, in the movement construct, the fundamental physical education in schools, for example, the goal has to teach kids, like you mentioned in your case, who don't know how to kick the ball well. And if somebody taught you at age 4 or 5, saying, hey, this is the way to kick the ball, right? And start where you are. And say, okay, now let's start. Let me make it fun for you to kick the ball. Then when I put you on a playing field of football, you will enjoy that experience. Because your group will say, hey, I want Nina in my team. She knows how to play. That positive experience that has to come through requires a teaching, not coaching. Teaching requires me to get somebody who's not fascinated with that sport or movement and get them to fall in love with that. That's a fundamental teaching. That's why I think one of the problems is that teaching as a notion is not getting the value it deserves. Teaching is getting the less interested kids interested in the subject, whether it's maths or movement. And that's a very different approach than pushing the child who's already good into high performance. Somebody who's not interested, I have to get her interested, versus somebody who's already good, I'm pushing her for high performance. They're two very different approaches to child development. They need teaching, not coaching.
What advice do you have for other teachers?
As a teacher, one of the biggest problems you have is the attention of kids. You wanting to teach them something that kids don't necessarily want to learn what you want to teach, right? And with movement and play, you have a powerful force available to start with something that kids already want to do. They want to move, they want to play, they want to have fun. Can you embrace as a teacher, whether you're a math teacher or a science teacher or a geography teacher or a history teacher or English teacher, can you embrace a movement concept along with your subject, right? Where you take the kids out to the playground and teach a concept that you want to teach. We have examples of how you can use, let's say, teach mathematics concepts, how you can use color, teach about colors while kids are moving and playing. Now, that's a way where kids will learn, remember for life. So my advice would be that the power of play is so good that you will find kids wanting your class, wanting your subject because they're having fun. The teaching is just happening. And I think if you're able to combine the two of your academic subject with movement, you will have the magic of kids' retention, engagement, and your learning outcome.
From India, we travel another long distance to California. Tanya is an entrepreneur who created an innovative school model for children called the App Academy. I talked to her briefly on our episode about building entrepreneurial mindsets. And today, we will hear how Tanya's model arranges the school space and classrooms to offer children a variety of possibilities for movement. Hello, Tanya. How are you?
Hello. I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
I am in my afternoon, but I think it is morning for you, right?
It's still dark. Yes, very early morning. I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area. The school is located in San Mateo, California.
Today, we are talking about physical well-being, but I always like to incorporate learnings from past episodes. And in our previous episode, we talked about learning variability. Tanya, your school considers how each student learns differently at different times.
Yeah, well, at Up Academy, we really started from a base of being student-centered and how can we create a methodology and a school environment that's going to be the best possible place for our students to be and for them to learn and grow and thrive. I didn't have all of the preconceived notions of teachers or educators who have been taught in a certain way and trained in specific schools and learned how to do education the way that public education is currently done. I was really coming from a completely different aspect of looking at specifically what my children needed and then expanding that to how can this be beneficial for all children.
What does the UP Academy look like?
When you walk into our school, one of the first things you see is a large indoor monkey bar structure. And that was created to provide brain breaks for students, to provide a therapeutic outlet for students, to provide a space for movement for students.
How do you integrate movement during classroom time too?
Honestly, we also use it for literacy learning and movement thinking. So students might be balancing on a balance board while learning their phonics, or tracking a hand fluency map while they're learning sight words, or throwing scarves in the air and learning to read simple poems. And so they're coordinating this movement with learning, which really helps the brain develop. It helps learning to be sticky. It helps to be able to retain and transfer that learning. For young children, as they're developing, they really integrate their learning through play. So it's through imaginative play. It's through movement on the playground. It's through conversing with each other and playing games. And they really need that time to be able to integrate the learning that they're doing. So having spaces for them to move was really important to us. And then in our classrooms, you know, that continues. We have flexible seating in all of our classrooms. Our students choose where they're going to be most successful that day. We have noise-canceling headphones in all of our classrooms for all of our students. Often one of the things I see with accommodations in schools is that there might be a corner where there's one bouncy chair and one set of headphones, and that's for the one student who has accommodations. And schools are seeing this as inclusive because it's in the classroom, but it's still very othering because it's one student allowed these things and it's back in the corner of the classroom and they have to physically move and remove themselves to this space to be able to do it. But the reality is we all get frustrated when the kid next to us is humming and we're trying to concentrate. We all need a break from our environment or our community or our group or our work from time to time. These things are universal. So when we create universal flexible seating and universal noise-canceling headphones and a space in the room that's a quiet space to take a break that we call the peace corner, we're really creating the opportunity for all of our students to get to know themselves and to use the tools that are available to support their own learning, their own mental health, and their own ability to continually participate at their best in the classroom environment.
I agree that supporting learners' autonomy through self-knowledge is important. Tanya, you believe in building positive relationships to foster students' well-being. How do you do that at the UP Academy?
So one of the things that we do is we have a community framework in all of our classes. So in elementary school, our day starts with a community circle in the morning. And this is time to connect as a community, time to share those things. Like, is something on your mind? Did something happen at home? Did you not sleep well? Did you hate your breakfast and you didn't eat it and you're hungry? Are you super excited about a vacation your family's going on or something that's happening after school or somebody's coming to visit? Like, all of those things that are on our minds that, quote unquote, get in the way of learning, those are the things that make us human, and those are the essence of life and connection and building relationships. And so making time for all of these things in the classroom really allows us to build a community, allows us to share the things that we're thinking about so that we can focus and learn better when we get there. Our day starts with a community circle. Our class has some downtime to reconnect and recharge after lunch. We have a reflection period. And then at the end of the day, we have a closing circle where we're connecting once again and sharing the things that went well that day or the things that could have gone better or we were disappointed in or anxious about or nervous about or the things we were really excited about. So taking the time in our classes and in our schools to really appreciate our differences and build those things up together is only going to make us more successful.
I like this method for building good conditions for children to express their needs and emotions. I can see how it could help build a socially cohesive learning environment. As we finish our journey today, I would like to reflect on what our guests today have shared. Fotini helps me wrap up with an important conclusion.
The main thing that I would like to get across is that just like the arts, physical activity, you're doing it because it makes you feel good. It should make you feel good. That comes with a lot of other benefits. So animals are social beings, and doing things together, you know, get the blood flow going and offering different activities is something that's really important.
In this episode, we have shone a spotlight on physical well-being through movement, but the different aspects of well-being are all interconnected. When children feel well in their bodies, thanks to physical activity, it can impact their mental well-being. This week, I've been practicing a lot of physical activity because I love playing with my dog. And now that I'm on the beach, I'm in a quite rural environment. I play a lot and that makes me feel good. And it makes me think how physical activity should be more accessible to everyone. Creating the conditions for children to enjoy physical activity can also benefit children's social well-being. Physical activity makes us feel good in our minds and bodies. Both Fotini and Somil highlighted that the young person should be at the center of this conversation. We as adults need to make sure that all children are given enough choices and opportunities for children to find options to practice the physical movement that they can enjoy the most. Thanks for listening to Teachers' Voices. You can find out about our guests today in the show notes. We always like to hear from you, so please get in touch. You can engage with us in conversations on social media and by joining our WhatsApp group. Please don't forget to follow us and subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast platform.